C.M.O.T. Dibbler liked to be up at first light in case there was an opportunity to sell a worm to the early bird. He had set up a desk in the corner of one of Chalky's workshops. He was, by and large, against the idea of a permanent office. On the positive side, it made him easier to find, but on the negative side, it made him easier to find. The success of Dibbler's commercial strategy hinged on him being able to find customers, not the other way round. Quite a large number of people seemed to have found him this morning. Many of them were holding guitars.
"Right,"
he said to Ashfelt, whose flat head was just visible over the top of the makeshift desk.
"All understood. It'll take you 2 days to get to Pseudopolis, and then you report to Mr. Klopstock at the bullpit, and I'll want receipts for everything."
"Yes, Mr. Dibbler.
It'll be a good idea to get away from the city for a bit."
"Yes, Mr. Dibbler."
"Did I already say I wanted receipts for everything?"
"Yes, Mr. Dibbler," sighed Ashfelt.
"Off you go, then."
Dibbler ignored the troll and beckoned to a group of dwarfs who'd been hanging around patiently.
"Okay, you lot, come over here. So, you want to be music with Roxine stars, do you?"
"Yes, sir."
"Then listen here to what I say."
Ashfelt looked at the money. It wasn't much to feed four people for several days. Behind him, the interview continued.
"So, what do you call yourselves?"
Dwarfs, Mr. Dibbler," said the lead dwarf.
"Dwarfs?"
"Yes, sir."
"Why?"
"Because we are, Mr. Dibbler," said the lead dwarf patiently.
No, that won't do. That won't do at all. You've got to have a name with a bit of..."
Dibbler waved his hands in the air.
"With a bit of music with Roxine. Not just dwarfs. You've got to be, oh, I don't know, something more interesting."
"But we're certainly dwarfs," said one of the dwarfs.
"We're certainly dwarfs," said Dibbler. "Yes, that might work. Okay, I can book you in at the Bunch of Grapes on Thursday, and into the free festival, of course, since it's free. You don't get paid, of course."
"We've written this song," said the head dwarf, hopefully.
"Good, good," said Dibbler, scribbling on his notepad. "It's called Something's Gotten Into My Beard." "Good."
"Don't you want to hear it?"
Dibbler looked up.
"Hear it? I'd never get anything done if I went around listening to music. Off you go. See you next Wednesday. Next! You all trolls?"
"That's right."
In this case, Dibbler decided not to argue. Trolls were a lot bigger than dwarfs.
"All right, but you've got to spell it with a Z. Trolls."
"Yep, looks good. Mended Drum Friday and the free festival. Yes?"
"We've done a song."
"Good for you. Next."
"It's us, Mr. Dibbler."
Dibbler looked at Jimbo, Noddy, Crash and Scum.
"You've got a nerve," he said, "after last night."
"We got a bit carried away," said Crash. "We was wondering if we could have another chance."
"You did say the audience loved us," said Noddy.
"Loathed you. I said the audience loathed you," said Dibbler. "Two of you kept looking at Blurt Whedon's guitar primer."
"We've changed her name," said Jimbo. "We thought, well, Insanity was a bit daft. It's not a proper name for a serious band that's pushing back the boundaries of musical expression and is definitely going to be big one day."
"Thursday,"
nodded Noddy.
"So now we're Suck," said Crash.
Dibbler gave them a long, cool look. Bear baiting, bull harassing, dog fighting, and sheep worrying were currently banned in Ankh-Morpork, although the patrician did permit the unrestricted hurling of rotten fruit at anyone suspected of belonging to a street theatre group. There was, perhaps, an opening.
"All right," he said. "You can play at the festival. After that, we'll see."
After all, he thought, there was a possibility that they'd still be alive. A figure climbed slowly and unsteadily out of the Ankh onto a jetty by the Misbegot Bridge, and stood for a moment as mud dripped off him and formed a puddle under the planks. The bridge was quite high. There were buildings on it, lining it on both sides so that the actual roadway was quite cramped. The bridges were quite popular as building sites because they had a very convenient sewage system and, of course, a source of fresh water. There was the red eye of a fire in the shadows under the bridge. The figure staggered towards the light. The dark shapes around it turned and squinted into the gloom, trying to fathom the nature of their visitor.
"It's a farm cart," said Glod. "I know a farm cart when I see one, even if it is painted blue, and it's all battered."
"It's all you can afford," said Ashfeld. "Anyway, I'll put fresh straw in."
"I thought we were going in the stagecoach," said Cliff.
"Oh, Mr. Dibbler says artists of your calibre shouldn't travel in a common public vehicle," said Ashfeld. "Besides, he said you wouldn't want the expense."
"What do you think, Buddy?" said Glod.
"Don't mind," said Buddy, vaguely.
Glod and Cliff shared a glance.
"I bet if you were to go and see Dibbler and demand something better, you'd get it," said Glod, hopefully.
"It's got wheels," said Buddy. "It'll do."
He climbed aboard and sat down in the straw.
"Mr. Dibbler's had some new shirts done," said Ashfeld, aware that there was not a lot of jolliness in the air. "It's for the tour. Look, it says on the back, 'Everywhere you're going.' Isn't that nice?"
"Yes, when the Musicians' Guild twist our heads round, we'll be able to see where we've been," said Glod.
Ashfeld cracked his whip over the horses. They ambled off at a pace that suggested they intended to keep it up all day, and no idiot too soft to really use a whip properly was going to change their minds.
The buggery. The grawny man, says I. Buggery. He's a yellow gloak, so he is. 10,000 years. Buggery."
"Really?"
Death relaxed. There were half a dozen people around the fire, and they were convivial. A bottle was circling the group. Well, actually, it was half a tin, and Death hadn't quite worked out what was in it, or in the rather larger tin that was bubbling on the fire of old boots and mud. They hadn't asked him who he was. None of them had names, as far as he could tell. They had labels, like Stalling Ken, and Coffin Henry, and Foul Old Ron, which said something about what they were, but nothing about what they had been. The tin reached him. He passed it on as tactfully as he could and lay back peacefully. People without names. People who were as invisible as he was. People for whom death was always an option. He could stay here a while.
"Free music?" Mr. Cleet growled. "Free? What sort of idiot makes music for free? At least you put a hat down, get people to drop the odd copper in. Otherwise, what's the point?"
He stared at the paperwork in front of him for so long that Satchelmouth coughed politely.
"I'm thinking," said Mr. Cleet, "that wretched veterinary. He said it's up to the guilds to enforce guild law."
I heard they're leaving the city," said Satchelmouth. On tour, out in the country, I heard. It's not our law out there."
"The country?" said Mr. Cleet. "Yes. Dangerous place, the country."
"Right," said Satchelmouth. There's turnips, for a start."
Mr. Cleet's eye fell on the guild's account books. It occurred to him, not for the first time, that far too many people put their trust in iron and steel when gold made some of the best possible weapons.
"Is Mr. Downey still head of the Assassins' Guild?" he said.
The other musicians looked suddenly nervous.
"Assassins," said Herbert, Mr. Harpsichord Shuffle. "I don't think anyone's ever called in the Assassins. This is guild business, isn't it? Can't have another guild interfering."
That's right," said Satchelmouth. "What would happen if people knew we'd used the Assassins?"
"We'd get a lot more members," said Mr. Cleet in his reasonable voice, "and we could probably put the subscriptions up."
"Now, hang on a minute," said Satchelmouth. "I don't mind us seeing to people who won't join. That's proper guild behaviour, that is. But Assassins, well..."
"Well, what?" said Mr. Cleet.
They assassinate people."
"You want free music, do you?" said Mr. Cleet.
Well, of course I don't want...
"I don't remember you talking like this when you jumped up and down on that street violinist's fingers last month," said Mr. Cleet.
Yes, well, that wasn't like a... assassination, said Satchel Mouth. I mean, he was able to walk away. Well, crawl away. And he could still earn a living, he added. Not one that required the use of his hands, sure, but...
And that penny whistle lad? That one who plays a chord now every time he hiccups?
Yeah, but that's not the same as...
Do you know Weedown, the guitar maker? Said Mr. Cleet.
Satchel Mouth was unbalanced by the change in direction.
I'm told he's been selling guitars like there was no next Wednesday, said Mr. Cleet. But I don't see any increase in membership. Do you?
Well,
once people get the idea that they can listen to music for nothing, where will it end?
He glared at the other two.
"Dunno, Mr. Cleet," said Shuffle obediently.
"Very well, and the patrician has been ironical at me," said Mr. Cleet. "I'm not having that again. It's the assassins this time."
"I don't think we should actually have people killed," said Satchel Mouth doggedly.
"I don't want to hear any more from you," said Mr. Cleet. "This is guild business."
Yes. Yes, but it's our guild.
Exactly. So, shut up.
The cart rattled between the endless cabbage fields that led to Pseudopolis.
I've been on tour before, you know, said Lod, when I was with Snorri Cousin and his brass idiots. Every night a different bed. You forget what day of the week it is after a while.
What day of the week is it now? Said Cliff.
See, and we've only been on the road, what, 3 hours, said Glod.
Where are we stopping tonight, said Cliff.
Scrout, said Ashfelt.
Sounds a really interesting place, said Cliff.
Been there before, with the circus, said Ashfelt. It's a one-horse town.
Buddy looked over the side of the cart, but it wasn't worth the effort. The rich, silty Stowe Plains were the grocery of the continent, but not an awe-inspiring panorama, unless you were the kind of person who gets excited about 53 types of cabbage and 81 types of bean. Spaced every mile or so on the checkerboard of fields was a village, and spaced rather further apart were the towns. They were called towns because they were bigger than the villages. The cart passed through a couple of them. They had two streets in the form of a cross, one tavern, one seed store, one forge, one livery stable with a name like Joe's Livery Stable, a couple of barns, three old men sitting outside the tavern, and three young men lounging outside Joe's, swearing that one day really soon now they were going to leave town and make it big in the world outside. Real soon. Any day now.
"Reminds you of home, eh?"
said Cliff, nudging Buddy.
"What? No. Flamedos is all mountains and valleys, and rain, and mist, and evergreens."
Buddy sighed.
"You had a great house there, I expect," said the troll. "Just a shack," said Buddy, "made of earth and wood. Well, mud and wood, really."
He sighed again.
"It's like this on the road," said Ashfelt. "Melancholy. No one to talk to but each other. I've known people go totally insane."
"How long has it been now?" said Cliff.
3 hours and 10 minutes, said Glod.
Buddy sighed. They were invisible people, Death realized. He was used to invisibility. It went with the job. Humans didn't see him until they had no choice. On the other hand, he was an anthropomorphic personification, whereas Foul Old Ron was human, at least technically. Foul Old Ron made a small living by following people until they gave him money not to. He'd also got a dog, which added something to Foul Old Ron's smell. It was a greyish-brown terrier with a torn ear and nasty patches of bare skin. It begged with an old hat in its remaining teeth, and since people will generally give to animals that which they'd withhold from humans, it added considerably to the earning power of the group. Coffin Henry, on the other hand, earned his money by not going anywhere. People organizing important social occasions sent him anti-invitations and little presents of money to ensure he wouldn't turn up. This was because if they didn't, Henry had a habit of sidling ingratiatingly into the wedding party and inviting people to look at his remarkable collection of skin diseases. He also had a cough, which sounded almost solid. He had a sign on which was chalked, For some money I want follow you home, cough, cough. Arnold sideways had no legs. It was a lack that didn't seem to figure largely among his concerns. He would grab people by their knees and say, "Have you got change for a penny?" invariably profiting by the ensuing cerebral confusion. And the one they called the Duck Man had a duck on his head. No one mentioned it, no one drew attention to it. It seemed to be a minor feature of no consequence, like Arnold's leglessness and foul old Ron's independent smell, or Henry's volcanic spitting. But it kept nagging at Death's otherwise peaceful mind. He wondered how to broach the subject. "After all," he thought to himself, "he must know, mustn't he? It's not like lint on your jacket or something." By common agreement, they'd called Death Mr. Scrub. He didn't know why. On the other hand, he was among people who could hold a lengthy discussion with a door. There may have been a logical reason. The beggars spent their day wandering invisibly around the streets where people who didn't see them carefully circled out of their way and threw them the occasional coin. Mr. Scrub fitted in very well. When he asked for money, people found it hard to say no. Scrote didn't even have a river. It existed simply because there's only so much land you can have before you have to have something else. It had two streets in the form of a cross, one tavern, one seed store, one forge, a couple of barns, and in a gesture of originality, one livery stable called Seth's Livery Stable. Nothing moved. Even the flies were asleep. Long shadows were the only occupants of the streets. "I thought you said this was a one-horse town," said Cliff, as they pulled up in the rutted, puddled area that was probably glorified by the name of Town Square. "It must have died," said Ashfelt. Glod stood up in the cart and spread his arms wide. He yelled, "Hello, Scrote!" The name board over the livery stable parted from its last nail and landed in the dust. "What I like about this life on the road," said Glod, "is the fascinating people and interesting places." "I expect it comes alive at night," said Ashfelt. "Yeah," said Cliff. "Yeah, I can believe that, yes. This looks like the kind of town that comes alive at night. This looks like the whole town should be buried at the crossroads with a stake through it." "Talking of stake," said Glod. They looked at the tavern. The cracked and peeling sign just managed to convey the words, "The Jolly Cabbage." "I doubt it," said Ashfelt. There were people in the dimly lit tavern, sitting in sullen silence. The travellers were served by the innkeeper, whose manner suggested that he hoped they died horribly just as soon as they left the premises. The beer tasted as if it was happy to connive at this state of affairs. They huddled at one table, aware of the eyes on them. "I've heard about places like this," whispered Glod. "You go into this little town with a name like Friendly or Amity, and next day you're spare ribs."
"Not me," said Cliff. "I'm too stony."
"Well, you're in the rockery, then," said the dwarf. He looked round at a row of furrowed faces and raised his mug theatrically. "Cabbage is doing well," he said. "I see in the fields they're nice and yellow. Ripe, eh? That's good, eh?"
"That's root fly, that is," said someone in the shadows.
"Good, good," said Glod.
He was a dwarf. Dwarfs didn't farm.
"We don't like circuses in Scrote," said another voice.
It was a slow, deep voice.
"We're not a circus," said Glod brightly. "We're musicians." "We don't like musicians in Scrote," said another voice.
There seemed to be more and more figures in the gloom.
What do you like in Scrote?" said Ashfelt.
"Well," said the barman, now a mere outline in the gathering darkness, "round about this time of year we generally have a barbecue down by the rockery."
Buddy sighed. It was the first time he'd made a sound since they'd arrived in the town.
"I guess we'd better show them what we play," he said.
There was a twang in his voice. It was some time later. Glod looked at the door handle. It was a door handle. You got hold of it with your hand. But what was supposed to happen next?
"Door handle," he said, in case that would help. "You're supposed to do something with it," said Cliff, from somewhere near the floor.
Buddy leaned past the dwarf and turned the handle.
"Bazing,"
said Glod, and stumbled forward. He levered himself off the floor and looked around.
"What's this?"
"The tavern keeper said we could stay here for free," said Buddy.
"It's a mess," said Glod. "Some of them fetch me brim in the scurrybush this minute."
Ashfelt wobbled in, carrying the luggage, and with Cliff's sack of rocks in his teeth. He dropped the lot on the floor.
"Well, that was astonishing, sir," he said, "the way you just went into that barn and said, what was it you said?"
"Let's do the show right here," said Buddy, lying down on a straw mattress.
"Amazing. They must have been coming in from miles around."
Buddy stared at the ceiling and played a few chords.
"And that barbecue," said Ashfelt, still radiating enthusiasm. "The sauce."
"The beef," said Glod.
"The charcoal," murmured Cliff happily.
There was a wide black ring around his mouth.
"And who'd have thought," said Glod, "that you could brew a beer like that out of cauliflowers?"
"Had a great head on it," said Cliff.
"I thought we were going to be in a bit of trouble there before you played," said Ashfelt, shaking the beetles out of another mattress. "I don't know how you got them dancing like that."
"Yes," said Buddy.
"And we didn't even get paid," murmured Glod.
He slumped back. Shortly there were snores, given a slightly metallic edge by the reverberation in his helmet. When the others were asleep, Buddy put the guitar down on the bed, quietly opened the door and crept downstairs and into the night. Would have been nice if there'd been a full moon, or even a crescent. A full moon would have been better, but there was just a half moon, which never appears in romantic or occult paintings, despite the fact that it is indeed the most magical phase. There was a smell of stale beer, dying cabbages, barbecue embers, and insufficient sanitation. He leaned against Seth's livery stable. It shifted slightly. It was fine when he was on stage, or as it had been tonight, on an old barn door set on a few bricks. Everything was in bright colours. He could feel white-hot images arcing across his mind. His body felt as though it were on fire, but also, and this was the important bit, as if it was meant to be on fire. He felt alive, and then afterwards, he felt dead. There was still colour in the world. He could recognise it as colour, but it seemed to be wearing Cliff's smoked glasses. Sounds came as if through cotton wool. Apparently the barbecue had been good. He had Glod's word for that. But to Buddy, it had been texture, and not much else. A shadow moved across the space between two buildings. On the other hand, he was the best. He knew it, not as some matter of pride or arrogance, but simply as a matter of fact. He could feel the music flowing out of him and into the audience. "This one, sir?" whispered a shadow beside the livery stable, as Buddy wandered along the moonlit street.
"Yes, this one first, and then into the tavern for the other two. Even the big troll, there's a spot on the back of the neck."
"But not Dibbler, sir?"
"Strangely, no. He's not here."
"Shame. I bought a meat pie off him once."
"It's an attractive suggestion, but no one's paying us for Dibbler."
The assassins drew their knives, the blades blackened to avoid the tell-tale shine.
"I could give you tuppence, sir, if that'd help."
"It's certainly tempting."
The senior assassin pressed himself against the wall as Buddy's footsteps grew louder. He gripped his knife at waist height. No one who knew anything about knives ever used the famous overarm stabbing motion so beloved of illustrators. It was amateurish and inefficient. A professional would strike upwards. The way to a man's heart was through his stomach. He drew his hand back and tensed. An hourglass, glowing faintly blue, was suddenly thrust in front of his eyes.
"Lord Robert Salarchi," said a voice by his ear, "this is your life."
He squinted. There was no mistaking the name engraved on the glass. He could see every little grain of sand pouring into the past. He turned, took one look at the hooded figure, and ran for it. His apprentice was already 100 yards away and still accelerating.
"Sorry, who's that?"
Susan tucked the hourglass back into her robe and shook out her hair. Buddy appeared.
"You?"
"Yes, me," said Susan. Buddy took a step nearer.
"Are you going to fade away again?" he said.
"No, I have actually just saved your life, as a matter of fact." Buddy looked around at the otherwise empty night.
"From what?"
Susan bent down and picked up a blackened knife.
"This," she said. I know we've had this conversation before, but who are you? Not my fairy godmother, are you?
I think you have to be a lot older, said Susan. She backed away, and probably a lot nicer, too. Look, I can't tell you any more. You're not even supposed to see me. I'm not supposed to be here. Neither are you.
You're not going to tell me to stop playing again, are you? Said Buddy, angrily. Because I won't. I'm a musician. If I don't play, what am I then? I might as well be dead. Do you understand? Music is my life.
He took a few steps nearer.
Why are you following me around? Ashfeld said there'd be girls like you.
What on disc do you mean, girls like me? Buddy subsided a bit, but only a little.
They follow actors and musicians around, he said, because of, you know, the glamour and everything.
Glamour? Some smelly cart and a tavern that smells of cabbages? Buddy held up his hands.
Listen, he said urgently, I'm doing all right. I'm working. People are listening to me. I don't need any more help, all right? I've got enough to worry about, so please keep out of my life.
There was the sound of running feet, and Ashfeld appeared with the other members of the band behind him.
The guitar was screaming, said Ashfeld. Are you all right?
You'd better ask her, muttered Buddy.
All three of them looked directly at Susan.
Who?
Said Cliff.
She's right in front of you.
Glod waved a stubby hand in the air, missing Susan by inches.
It was probably that cabbage, said Cliff to Ashfeld.
Susan stepped backwards quietly.
She's right there, but she's going away now, can't you see?
That's right, said Glod, taking Buddy's arm. She's going away now, and good riddance. So just you come on back.
Now she's getting on that horse.
Yes, yes, a big black horse.
It's white, you idiot.
Hoofprints burned red on the ground for a moment and then faded.
And it's gone now?
The band with Roxin stared into the night.
Yes, I can see that, now you mention it, said Cliff. There's a horse that isn't there, sure enough.
Yes, that's certainly what a horse that's gone looks like, said Ashfeld carefully.
None of you saw her,
said Buddy, as they manoeuvred him gently back through the pre-dawn greyness.
I heard where musicians, really good musicians, got followed around by these half-naked young women called muses, said Glod.
Like Cantaloupe, said Cliff.
We don't call them muses, said Ashfeld, grinning. I told you, when I worked for Bertie the Balladeer and his troubadour rascals, we used to get any amount of young women hanging around. Amazing how legends get started when you come to think about it, said Glod. Just you come along now, my lad.
She was there, Buddy protested. She was there.
Cantaloupe, said Ashfeld. You sure, Cliff?
Read it in a book once, said the troll. Cantaloupe, I'm pretty sure. Something like that.
She was there, said Buddy.
The raven snored gently on top of his skull, counting dead sheep. The death of rats came through the window in an arc, bounced off a dribbly candle, and landed on all fours on the table. The raven opened one eye.
Oh, it's you.
Then a claw was round its leg, and the death of rats jumped off the skull and into infinite space. There were more cabbage fields the next day, although the landscape did begin to change a bit.
Hey, that's interesting, said Glod.
What is? Said Cliff.
There's a field of beans over there.
They watched it until it was out of sight.
Nice of the people to give us all this food, though, said Ashfeld. We shan't be wanting for cabbages, eh?
Oh, shut up, said Glod.
He turned to Buddy, who was sitting with his chin resting on his arms.
Cheer up. We'll be in Pseudopolis in a couple of hours, he said.
Good,
said Buddy distantly. Glod climbed back into the front of the cart and pulled Cliff towards him.
Notice the way he goes all quiet, he whispered.
Yep. Do you think it'll be, you know, done by the time we get back?
You can get anything done in Ankh-Morpork, said Glod firmly. I must have knocked on every damn door in the Street of Cunning Artificers.
$25.
You're complaining. It ain't your tooth that's paying for it.
They both turned to look at their guitarist. He was staring out across the endless fields.
She was there,
he muttered. Feathers spiraled towards the ground.
"You didn't have to go and do that," said the raven, fluttering upright. "You could simply ask."
"Squeak."
"All right, but before would have been better."
The raven ruffled its feathers and looked around at the bright landscape under the dark sky.
"This is the place, then, is it?" he said. "You're sure you're not the death of ravens, too?"
"Squeak?"
"Shape doesn't mean much. Anyway, you've got a pointy snout. What was it you were wanting?"
The death of rats grabbed a wing and pulled.
"All right, all right."
The raven glanced at a garden gnome. It was fishing in an ornamental pond. The fish were skeletal, but this didn't seem to interfere with their enjoyment of life, or whatever it was they were enjoying. It fluttered and hopped along after the rat.